Welcome to CounselorAudioSource.net. Counselor Audio Source is a weekly podcast dedicated to the professional enhancement of practicing counselors, supervisors, and counselor educators. Look for us on the web at CounselorAudioSource.net. I'm Dr. Marty Gensius from Kent State University, and this week on Counselor Audio Source, contributing editor Dr. Mark A. Young, assistant professor and director of the Counselor Education Program at Eastern Washington University, interviews Dr. Foster Klein. Dr. Klein is co-founder of the Love and Logic Institute and speaks about the parent training program of Love and Logic.
To start out with, simply just what is love and logic?
Love and logic is a way of parenting and teaching children in a way that avoids control battles and is most likely to gain the child's happy compliance with adult requests. And basically what we say is that we want the kids to be basically responsible, respectful, and enjoyable to be around. And it's always surprising at how many parents these days don't really, way down deep in their hearts, expect that their kids almost all the time are going to be respectful, responsible, and fun to be around. Although they sort of expect that of themselves, it sort of gets lost with the kids. So it's, you know, you go into homes and it's like the air is just a little polluted by the kids. You'd rather the kids not be around, and it's just heartbreaking. And so love and logic is a way of raising parental expectations and helping parents with very, very usable tools and techniques that are most effective in reaching the kids.
You mentioned that it uses tools or techniques. What are some examples of specific techniques?
Well, like one tool would be, for instance, enforceable statements. An unenforceable statement might be I'm going to leave in 10 minutes and you have to be ready. Nobody has to be ready. You don't even have to be ready for a United flight. You know, get ready for bed right now. You know, all this ordering around, they're unenforceable statements. Now, if a parent says, guys, I'm leaving in 10 minutes. Luckily, nobody has to be dressed to go with me. I'm happy to take nudes. I'm happy to take people half-dressed. So you have a choice here. You know, this is when I'm leaving. Don't feel you have to be ready. You know, and it's a way of saying, you know, an unwise parent would say something like, hurry up and get upstairs so you can be ready when I read to you. And a wise parent, talking about herself, says, hey, it's 8:30. I read stories between 8:30 and 8:45. I'm going up to read now. You don't have to be there. Bingo. You know, so enforceable statements don't say what the kids have to do. They say what we're willing to do. I'm willing to do this and this and this and this. And really, it's a way of giving another enforceable tool is to give a kid a choice. You know, would you like to eat in your high chair, or would you like to, you know, would you like to have breakfast tomorrow? You know, and sort of let meal be over. You know, would you like to play on the floor, or would you like to eat in your high chair? But you don't have a choice of eating on the floor. That's not a choice. See. So it's a matter of giving choices, giving enforceable statements, and allowing the children to make mistakes without getting mad, but being sad that they're making that mistake. It's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I don't think this will work out very well for you, rather than to get mad at the kids. So the major tools are enforceable statements, being sad, not mad, giving the kids choices, taking this parent setting the model, taking really good care of themselves. A lot of parents, no matter what they do, they tell their kids, I'm going to put you first. And the kids know they're always put first, which works out very well when they're very small, but what you end up with is very entitled, demanding kids. Whereas if a parent says, I'm always going to model putting myself first in a loving way. It doesn't allow the kids to take advantage of the parents, and the kid ends up being really thoughtful when they are in teen years and their peers around, and they put themselves first in a loving way, modeling after the parents.
So how do you support parents to put themselves first or take care of themselves?
Well, you know, at first, when you first talk about this, the parent, like, you're a really important person. You don't deserve to have the audio environment in the car polluted, you know. And you start talking about that, it's like a light bulb goes off. You mean the kids are supposed to be thoughtful around me? Like, really? You know? And so first is the realization, and then the support comes from classes and tapes and audio materials that patients, that parents and teachers can listen to over and over again until it becomes naturally. Instead of saying to the kids, you got to get your papers in on Saturday, a wise teacher says, hey guys, I grade over the weekend. So those of you for whom grades are important, be sure and turn it in by Friday. For those of you who don't care about your grades, any old time is fine. See, all of a sudden, they start, the tools and techniques become easier when parents hear it and are given examples and practice it themselves. And it's sort of self-reinforcing, because it's like a new day is dawning, and all of a sudden things really change with the kids. And so it's self-reinforcing.
What are some of the rules of love and logic, or key concepts?
Well, I've given a lot of the key concepts. It's a matter of treating the kids with respect, really, and treating and having a great deal of self-respect. And that's what the kids model after, is the parents. They model after the parents' self-respect. See, one of the things that love and logic teaches that is hard for people to realize is that all disrespectful children have a poor self-image. There is no disrespectful child to a loving parent that has a high self-image. And you wonder, well, why is that? Well, a lot of people in my field have that one backwards. They say, this kid is anti-authoritarian because he has a poor self-image. And it starts the other way around. It starts with parents allowing a child to be disrespectful to them. Then that child puts the parent inside them as their guiding light or ego ideal or internalized other or whatever the heck we want to call it. But they identify with the parent who allows the child to be disrespectful. Well, then that becomes a child's self-image, so then they're disrespectful to themselves, and that's called poor self-image. So all kids who are disrespectful have poor self-images. And the parents must insist on respect, which brings up another tool of love and logic. See, there's many things that kids do that are self-destructive that you simply can't control. You can't control whether or not they suck their thumb, pull their hair, bite their skin, are disrespectful to other people. There's just a lot of things you can't control, but you can control where the kid is. So you can say to the kid, honey, I know sucking your thumb is really important to you right now, so why don't you practice it in your bedroom? Because the dresser and the bed don't really mind being around a person who sucks their thumb a lot, and it kind of hassles my eyeballs, and I don't like to see it. So why don't you whip in there and spend 20 minutes and get it out of your system? So, you know, love and logic doesn't say kids have to be respectful, period. What I'm saying is, hey, guys, if you're going to be around me, you need to be respectful. So I can't decide whether or not my kids are respectful at school, but I can make sure they're respectful to me if they want to be around me. So I can say to my kids, if they're disrespectful, I don't even have to say, guys, a lot of parents make a mistake. They tell the kid what they're doing wrong, and the kid already knows what they're doing wrong. But a wise parent says to the kid, hey, honey, I find I'm not that relaxed being around you right now. Isn't that sad? So where could you go that I'm not? See, it's just like, and the kid, of course, will say, well, why? What'd I do? And then the wise pair could say, you know, honey, that's what I'm hoping you'll figure out. See you later, pal. You know, bingo. The kid is not part of the environment. And that kind of thing of telling the kid what they've done wrong. I was in a kindergarten not long ago, and this nasty little kid, Mark, was grabbing the teacher's face in a most obnoxious way and pinching the teacher's face. And the teacher says to the kid, ow, that hurts, as if she's trying to teach the kid something. And I say to the teacher, Lori, do you think that's really new information? Or could it be that that's why the kid did it? You know, it's like, ow, that hurts. Give me a low-grade break. Mommy doesn't like that. Nice people don't talk that way. Da-da, da-da, da-da. That's why the kid is doing it. You don't move your mouth saying that stuff. You say, honey, will you please go someplace else right now? I'm not that happy being around you right now. And it's funny when you're in the field and you see all the parents telling the kid, giving the kid information that the kid already knows rather than just taking action. It's a matter of not talking the talk but walking the walk. Yeah.
Would you say that Love and Logic is more focused on changing a child's behavior or changing a child's self-image?
I would say that it's mainly focuses on changing the environment which is operable for the kid. Basically, people do what works. So anytime you see a kid misbehaving, like for instance, a kid asks stupid questions, got to be around a parent who answers them. You see a kid who whines a lot, it's got to be around a parent who pleads. I mean, people do what operates. So in answer to your question, are we trying to change self-image or behavior? The fact of the matter is you can hardly change one without changing the other. But both are changed by changing the environment that is operable for the kid. So kids, everybody does what works. It's just that simple. So if you change what works, then both self-image and behavior change.
Can you give an example of how you would change the environment?
Well, yeah, that's what I've been doing here by the way, in essence, the way the parent talks and the way the parent comes through. That's an environmental change. See, the environmental change comes from a pleading parent that says, please, I'm busy right now. Can't you see that? You know, and why? And pleads that way with the kid, and then the kid whines, and basically it's going to be non-compliant. Versus a parent who says, "Honey, right now I'm thinking about fixing dinner. I can either talk to you, and then I won't have to worry about what you eat, or I can fix dinner now. Which would you appreciate? Fix dinner, right? So when will I talk to you? After dinner? That's a great idea. See." It's changing what works for the kid in the way the parents talk. You know, it's like my wife always used to say to the kids, we had a bunch of foster kids, and we had three foster kids and one little girl we adopted at age 8 who had trooped through two other adoptive homes and had disrupted and had some foster homes and had been in residential treatment a couple years. But it's like, you know, honey, every night I feed 4 mouths. Would you like one of those mouths to be yours, or should I feed the dog? I'll feed the dog. Oh, okay, good. That'd be a good mouth for you to feed, and then I'll worry about feeding your mouth. See? So it's consequences are there. The love is there. There's not a lot of ordering the kids around. There's a lot of giving choices. Everybody's allowed to fail.
What has been... And what is it that really helps parents change their behaviors?
I think the main thing is, one is practice, and two is one's practice, and the second thing is just the knowledge of, well, of course that would work. You know, it's the realization. Nothing in Love and Logic varies very far from common sense. I mean, Love and logic is just totally, I would have to say, common sense. And usually when you give a workshop or something, people are saying, well, of course, why did we get away from that? You know? So I think that's what helps parents, is practice hearing it over and over again. And, you know, the hardest things to change, the people that have the hardest trouble changing, Mark, are the people that have grown up in dysfunctional environments. Because usually they have parents who have been either abusive or not very responsive. So the parent confuses. If you've grown up in a dysfunctional environment, you refuse being centered in yourself with being self-centered in a negative way. And you refuse being, you confuse being consequential with being punitive. And you confuse being assertive with being aggressive. So when people, you know, an assertive person says, this is where I stand. An aggressive person says, where you need to go is, see? Well, when people have grown up with dysfunctional parents, that's the confusion. What's assertive? What's aggressive? What's punishment? What's consequences? So that always when some parents see a love and logic parent being consequential with a kid, their response will be, gee, that's mean. Uh-uh. That's not mean. That's the way United would handle it, or anyone else in the world would handle it. You know, if the kid is late or whatever. It's not mean, it's just the way the world operates. But, boy, it's tough when you've grown up in a dysfunctional environment. It, you know, it takes a little bit more work to change and see, because it's hard for the parent to see that they're really an important person. They carry on with them the thing that they were taught in their childhood, maybe I'm not that important.
How would a counselor who either works in a school or works in an agency, if they're interested in this, how would they get started?
Well, I would go on to loveandlogic.com, and there's a lot of free stuff there to download. And they would really get a lot of information off of that. And I would start out with just the basic Parenting with Love and Logic books, the Parenting with Love and Logic for kids and the Parenting with Love and Logic for teens, and Parenting Teens with Love and Logic. And I think I'd start, you know, sometimes counselors who are really working with parents don't require much of parents. I mean, one of the things I always used to say when I was very busy as a therapist is, look, you know, you guys have a busy life, I have a busy life. There's a lot of people who want to see me. My time is really limited. And what I need to know is, how hard are you people willing to work to see me? Because this is the thing. There's a lot of good therapists out there who won't require anything of you. And I can give you a lot of referrals to those people. But if you come to me, then you're going to have to do some reading, and you're going to have to come up with some thoughts, and we're going to have an interchange. Because if, you know, if you see me, there'll probably be some homework to do. There'll be some reading to do. There'll be some tapes to listen to and stuff like that. And that might not be your cup of tea. And luckily, there are so many people that don't require that. And would you like some referrals to those kind of people? Because I'm not one of them. Bingo. So, I mean, so many counselors and therapists, they have such low expectations of the people who see them. It's almost like when you start a session, it's like, well, where were we? Or we're working on it, whatever it is. Give me a low-grade break, you know? Let's have some goals here. Let's know whether or not we're working toward them. What do you people really want? And how are we going to get there? And what are you going to do to bring it about? And if you've had therapy before, or you've seen counselors before, let's figure out what they did and what you did so that we know what doesn't work, you know, so that we don't keep doing the same thing that you've had before. Well, I remember when parents used to come in and they would have a problem kid. I mean, right away I'd start out, well, what I need to do is find out what all the things are that you people have done so that we know what doesn't work. Then we can figure out. And I always used to tell people, too, if we're really lucky, what I'm thinking that you might do with the kid won't sound right to you, because you've already done everything that sounds right. So let's hope that what I'm telling you to do doesn't sound right. If it sounds right to you, it might be something that won't be that effective because you've done everything that sounds right to you.
Okay. Often counselors won't see a parent or the family until there's already a problem.
Yeah.
So how do they use love and logic then?
Oh, well, I like to have people give specific problems. Not that the kid is non-compliant. That doesn't help. Kid won't do what I tell him to do. All right. Let's pick one thing that Robert doesn't do when you tell him to do it. And let's work on that one thing. Then he does, then you say, then he does, and then you say. So let's get specific on what the problem is and give parents very specific sentences in how they need to come through to the child. I'll tell you, when I was a young therapist, I first started working with people, I thought that if I told them what to do, Mark, I thought if I told them what to do, they'd go out and do it. No, people aren't even compliant around taking medication very much. I can tell you that as a physician. So what I ended up doing, so the second step was to tell people what to do and then have them practice it on me so that it came through with the right tone of voice. And then what I finally ended up doing, which works best, of course, is to tell the parents what to say, then have them practice it on me, then bring in the kid right then and say, you know, John, your mom and dad have been doing some heavy thinking about this issue. And then I scratch my head and I look at the parents and I say, can you guys tell me what your new thinking on this is and tell John? So it's like it's coming from the parents to the kid on what their new thinking is. You know, I remember once one adolescent, when the parents said what their new thinking was, the kid looked at me and he said, what have you done to my parents? A new day is dawning, John. A new day is dawning. Yeah.
What would you say to, you know, I've worked with several parents and we've talked about love and logic and I've given them a book to read,
yeah,
or something, and they come back after only a few weeks and say, I tried it and it doesn't work.
And then what I would say is, well, that's so sad. Let's go over exactly what you said and exactly what the kid did. Now, one of the things that parents have to remember is that a kid's behavior, I always liken a kid's behavior to a car, a train with loaded coal cars. And how bad, quote, the behavior is analogous to how fast the train is going. And how long the behaviors lasted is analogous to how many coal cars there are. So that when the engineer and the fireman want to stop the train, and they put the brakes on all those wheels, and they put the driving wheels into reverse, all they get for the first 600 yards is a bunch of screeching and sparks. Nothing happens. So what happens then is the engineer, in the analogy of parents, they look out the window and they say, is the train slowing down? No, I knew it wouldn't work. Let's jump the damn track. So then they put it in full forward and they try and jump the bridge, you know, and they oscillate back and forth. But the fact of the matter is, love and logic, the nice thing about love and logic is parents are less likely to say that it doesn't work because love and logic is really into doing it right. Now, a kid can still make poor choices, and there will be consequences for those choices, but it's very hard for it not to work. If a parent says, you know, this is what I'm willing to do, and sticks to that, the kid may not, quote, immediately come around to be compliant, but they certainly learn, like, my gosh, my mom did leave me, you know. They didn't make the choice to be ready or to get ready to go or whatever it was, and it ended up being a bad deal for the kid, but the parent ends up happy because the parent carried out their enforceable statement. So it usually, I mean, kids aren't immediately going to change around, but I used to have a rule of thumb, Mark, and my rule of thumb was that It takes one for love and logic to become natural for a parent, and for the parents to naturally use it, and for the kids to naturally respond to it. It takes 1 month for every year the parents have been doing it wrong. So if a kid is 11 years old and is a bratty, snotty, negativistic, and nasty kid, there'll be change right away. But for it to become natural for the parents and natural for the kids and to reach an entire new equilibrium, it's probably 11 months down the road before the kid is, until everyone knows what's expected and things are running smoothly and it's no longer a trial. That doesn't mean that after I give a workshop, things can't be different in the following week, but it may not be natural. And the kids, I want to say something there, Mark. The kids always say it first. They say, "Gaw, when you talk to me like that, that's not really you." They said, "Where'd you learn to talk to me like that? Well, that's not really you." And I always have the parents turn to the kid, give them a little hug and say, "You know what? It's not really me now, but do you want some news? It will be me in 3 months. So get used to it."
When you were talking about that, you were talking about how, you know, it takes time for it to become natural.
Yeah.
And so I hear you placing the emphasis on it becoming natural for the parent, where often I hear parents saying, "I tried it, and now I'm hoping that the change happens in my kid versus the change continues in me."
Yeah, that's right. I mean, those parents have to, the parents have to stick to their guns. You can't be like the United States where I say, "Well, this year let's collect taxes, but we'll see how it works. And if it doesn't work, then I guess we'll quit collecting taxes." You guys stick to your guns.
Any other final thoughts? I mean, we just want to wrap this up. So any final conclusions, anything that you would...
Well, the only thing, I guess the thing that makes me the happiest in life is that love and logic is just really fun to teach. And it's very, very, very gratifying. Because you end up having a massive number of happy clients and parents, and they get back to you, and now their kid's in college, and they write you, and they say how glad they were they saw you, and all that kind of stuff. It's a very fulfilling life to teach love and logic. It's common sense. It's easy. The parents can, and teachers can easily implement it, and it really does change lives.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
You've just heard an interview of Dr. Foster Klein regarding the Love and Logic program by contributing editor Dr. Mark A. Young. Look for previous podcasts, show notes, and listener feedback on the podcast website at counselorsource.net. Listeners can leave comments or questions for our interview guests or hosts through our Skype.com internet telephone ID, Counselor Audio Source, or by calling 330-871-4242. Counseling techniques and interventions discussed in the Counselor Audio Source broadcast are meant for use by counseling professionals, and Counselor Audio Source is not held liable for any use of the techniques mentioned in the program. Our music bed today is Memorial Day from Jamie Beauchamp. His and other PodSafe music can be found in the PodSafe Music Network at podshow.com. Counselor Audio Source is licensed under the Creative Commons, a nonprofit organization offering a flexible copyright for creative work.